Welcome to Season 4 of Lightwork Presents Everything is Connected, where we share the interesting and inspiring stories of artists, critical thinkers, thought leaders, and art professionals on a wide range of topics about life, work, and our world. We share ideas on our inspirations and the influences that affect our lives. I'm your host, Fola Shadi Olugunduru, and I look forward to sharing the conversations I have with artists and creative professionals across the art industry and beyond. As I travel to art fairs, gallery openings, and events within the creative industries both in the U.S. and abroad, join me in discovering and learning about some of today's most interesting and dynamic artists and creative professionals. If you're new to the show, I'm happy to have you here. If you've been on this journey with me, welcome back. Let's get it.
On this episode, I'm joined by Mario Joyce. Mario Joyce is a self-taught African-American artist based in Los Angeles. His process began early and was heavily influenced by the prejudices he experienced growing up black and queer in rural Ohio. Joyce uses genealogical research, soil from the Ohio he grew up on, carefully sourced vintage collage materials and oil paint to explore how American history is steeped in selective storytelling that neglects to share the experiences of marginalized communities. Mario is a 2023 alum of the Skowhegan School of Painting and Sculpture and has recently completed the Pratt Forward residency at New Lab in Brooklyn Navy Yard in New York City. He's exhibited at UTA in Atlanta and recently closed solo exhibitions in Frankfurt, Germany. It's March when we get on the phone to talk. Freeze has ended and his show, Amaryllis' Garden, comes down shortly at UTA in Los Angeles. Amaryllis' Garden is Joyce's heartfelt homage to his late great-grandmother and the profound impact her urban oasis in Columbus, Ohio had on him as a child. Joyce would spend nostalgic hours in her garden, where she, after whom the exhibition is named, cultivated prize-winning amaryllis flowers. Vintage family photographs from the 1960s and 70s of Amaryllis' backyard sanctuary provide the setting for several of Joyce's new paintings. The works explore conceptualizations of heaven, paradise, darkness, and light through the lens of Joyce's upbringing as a young queer black boy growing up between contrasting rural and urban worlds. Let's dive into my next episode with Mario Joyce.
Mario Joyce, so looking forward to having you on an episode of Everything is Connected. Really looking forward to chatting with you today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and kind of discuss my work and just like and chat about what's going on and what's going on with you. And yeah, I'm really excited.
Wonderful. Let's jump right in. I'm glad that you just mentioned your work straight off the bat. So I know you had a show that closed at UTA about a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week or two ago now. Your show at UTA, yeah. Amaryllis Garden. I didn't get a chance to see it in person during Freeze LA and this past month and a half, but it looked like an incredible show. And I'd love to jump right in and talk a little bit about the work in that show, some of the things that you're thinking about, and yeah, just maybe your reflections on that body of work.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up because it's such a personal show for me. And all my work is really personal. I mean, I'm working with my ancestors, specifically my direct ancestors. My great-grandmother was what the show was really centered around. And more importantly, the garden or this oasis that she had created in Columbus, Ohio. And I grew up on a farm in southern Ohio. In the middle of really nowhere, we were the only black family. I was the only queer black boy that I knew of. And it was a struggle. And I didn't see anybody that looked like me outside of my immediate family. So when we would go to the city once a month, twice a month on Sundays, we would go to my great-grandmother Amaryllis' house. And she had this beautiful urban garden. And I mean, she grew beautiful amaryllises that were potted, but also geranium, anything, azaleas, grand trees that were in the yard. And this is a very modest home. It's a Cape Cod. And it was really in the middle of like a bad neighborhood in Columbus, Ohio. And I mean, we were driving there and I'm driving from the farm on the highway to the city. And then I'm seeing like what the Black experience looks like in the inner city. I'm finally seeing people that look like me, Black men and boys, and this whole culture that I felt very removed from. And then I arrive at her home and I'm seeing my cousins, my uncles, my aunts, and really like spending time with my extended family in this garden oasis. And so as a kid, looking around and looking at the flowers and looking up in the canopy of the trees, it was really special to me. I really felt like this was what heaven seemed like to me, the way the sun came through the branches and the leaves. It was really beautiful. And so I decided to kind of dedicate this show to that experience and where I am today as a Black man that grew up in a rural atmosphere, and how my great grandmother and how Black women really are the protectors, and they create these metaphorical gardens for us and our culture. And I really wanted to celebrate that. And I was also kind of having a conversation about my own mortality as a Black man in this country, and what like heaven and hell looks like for me, and why we need heaven. I'm questioning, there is really no heaven without, what drives the idea of heaven? Is it the alternative of hell? Is it our earthly existence? What really makes this paradise that I was forming in my young mind? Why did I need that? It's what I was questioning while making the work.
Yeah, there are so many things that you've said in that response that I'm thinking about and wanting to pull on. But one of them is thinking about maybe why this body of work and why now?
Yeah, I feel like this body of work was important to me personally. And my practice is really focused on moving from a place of like how I'm personally feeling now in this political and social climate as a ninth generation African American. How do I feel? And I'm motivated by that. But I think this atmosphere really is tumultuous right now. And post-COVID, I feel like we are just, everything is, it's just such extremes and such the polarization of just who we are and our ideas and how far we feel from each other. I feel like we just really need to explore peace and what that looks like and just true beauty. And I think beauty in nature is really important to me. I think there's a solace in that. And I also think there's a reflection that you can get. You can really come at peace and reflect on where we are when slowing down and really listening to each other. And I think that nature really helps us. It's conducive to that. And so I think like the show was really important for me to make for my own peace of mind and just grappling with where we are as a society. Because I think like social media, I think the news media and journalism, I think it's just what we're seeing in the world is so wild. I just think like stepping back and reflecting on nostalgia and what really made us feel at peace in our most vulnerable moments is important to explore as well.
Definitely. I want to go back to your comment earlier about your experiences as a Black male growing up and as a Black male moving through the world as an adult. And then what you mentioned about Black women and how they've sort of created gardens and really shepherded and loved on and cared for Black men, and sort of how that's impacted your life in the speaking of and the celebration of your great-grandmother. Can you talk a little bit about some of the ways in which Black women have really been influential in your life?
Yeah, in every step, every phone call I have with my mom just really gets me through just my experiences in the art world, which can be so opaque and really concerning at times. And I'm really passionate about what I do, but I just want to stay as grounded as possible. And I think my mom, my grandma did that. I was raised by a single mom. I mean, she was 14 when she got pregnant with me and 15 when she had me. And she raised me and my siblings just with such strength and diligence. I mean, she worked hard to be a bricklayer in an all-male company in Cincinnati, and that was about an hour away from the farm we grew up on, maybe an hour and 20 minutes. And so she drove that there and back every single day just to provide for us. My great-grandmother was really a great example of what a true Renaissance woman. I mean, she grew flowers. She was a part of every club. I never, ever heard her, no one, even my grandmother, her daughter, never heard her speak ill on anyone. And what a wonderful example of how to just go on and live your life in such, and I can't believe she was so moral in a world that looks like this. So it's admirable to me. And I think, like, on a more personal level, and like when I was going through something, I have an example of I had a number of traffic violations. I had a suspended license when I was living on the farm. It was like, I think I was 18 or 20. And it was parking tickets that got out of hand. And I got a suspended license and kept doing it for the fourth time. And the system threw me in jail and gave me 6 months in jail.
Oh my goodness.
And it was really wild, and it felt like such an, I was blindsided. I mean, my sister had taken me to court, my baby sister. And when they took me out in handcuffs, it was like traumatic for so many reasons, because the seal on your wrist, and just like, you felt like you were just a statistic, like you were a number, like they finally got me. And the judge had suspended the 6 month sentence to 30 days. But after 30 days, nothing, like they didn't let me out. And after 35 days, I'm like, thank God I knew my mom's number by heart and my grandma's number by heart. But I didn't know what was going on, because you're so isolated in this jail when you're surrounded by people who have really, they are in the trap. They just are caught up in the system. And simultaneously, I'm learning from them and like the experiences that put them in this position. While I didn't know, but my mom had raised hell in the courts and pulled up the transcripts and got me out, and they had made a clerical error. But what if I didn't have her? And what if I didn't have any kind of advocacy from a Black woman like this? I mean, she really is my hero for just getting me out of a situation that, what would happen to me if I had stayed in that prison, just, or in that jail for just 5 more days? I was deteriorating. And I realized that's how you get trapped. That's how you get caught up in a system. And sometimes it is just Black women that can get you out. So I say all that just to land on the fact that Black women really are, they're everything. They've gotten me through everything. They continue to guide me. And I'm just beyond grateful. So I'll just continue to celebrate them. But yeah, but thanks for asking that question, because it really is important to me to kind of break that down.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate your depth and your thoroughness and also your vulnerability in opening up and sharing that personal story. I think these are the moments where we really get to understand, you break down barriers and you kind of connect with people on a deeper level, because one is open to sharing, this is my life experience, this is what I've been through, and these are the ways in which I've arrived to be the person I am. If you're asking about my work, if you're asking about the way I see the world, so much of that has to do with how I've actually experienced the world, right?
Oh, I agree. Yeah. It's all there. It's in the practice. It's in the work. Definitely. So be ready for the real.
For sure. I love it. I want to speak a little bit about the idea of using genealogical research and soil from Ohio, where you grew up, and thinking about the materiality of your work, the use of vintage sourced collage materials, how you use oil paint, and considering that you're self-taught from what I've gathered, and we can go deeper into that. Can you talk a little bit about your use of material, why it's important to you, and how you ground your practice in what are the actual kind of objects and things that you're using to create work?
Yeah, thanks for asking. This also goes back to Amarillis, my great-grandmother, because she was a collector. And she wasn't a hoarder or anything, but she definitely loved to keep material from the past around. And she was a genealogist in the 70s when Alex Haley came out with Roots, the book, and then the miniseries came out. She was very inspired and started working on documenting family lore and kind of our own ancestry. And so when I was interested interested in that was when I had moved to the farm and we were learning about the forefathers, America's founding fathers, George Washington and Jefferson, and how grand they were. And I was hearing stories from the Black women in my family about characters that were on the ground, like really doing it. And in Ohio, I was hearing stories about us being the first pioneers of the state. Before 1803, when the state was founded, we were there shortly after. We were the first people in Kentucky. And so I'm trying to understand why we weren't learning about my family or my forefathers. And so I started gathering information, stories from my aunts that lived far away. I would have like weekly phone calls with them and just collect the family stories. Handwritten. I mean, this was like in the mid-90s. And so that's all I had. You know, I was a kid. I was 10 and I had like copy paper to write this on. And I did. And I would go to public libraries that my mom would take me to and sit really impatiently. And I would sift through books and not know what I was looking at. And so I started gaining like a strong genealogical practice and proving and disproving the stories in our family through documentation. And this is when I was a teenager. I mean, older people in archives and in historical societies really loved what I was doing. And they foreshadowed I was going to be some sort of archaeologist or just a historian in some way. But what I really loved was capturing family stories and then drawing them. So even when I was a little kid, my great-grandmother would give me the family pictures that we hung up on her wall, and I would take them home for a week and I would practice drawing them. And that's really how my self-taught practice started, was, and you can witness how it was based in storytelling, really, because I would draw the old photos, but I would also recite those family stories, and it became a way of remembering them and also celebrating them. And it evolved over time into self-portraiture, where I was really dismantling the idea of what it looked like to be a Black man and who I truly was. But also I became really interested in collecting vintage materials, like paper materials, and specifically used books from like these old libraries from the 70s and 80s that kind of trickled down to me and were really outdated by the time I was in school, but I loved the ink quality from 1969 and the encyclopedia set we had. And I loved Reader's Digest would put out these really beautiful books about the unsolved mysteries of the world. And it was just, it really fascinated me and made me very curious about what the world really was and what it looked like outside of my home and outside of the farm. And so I started collecting those as an adult. And they would pile up, and I just wanted to be around them. So I thought a way of preserving them so they don't decay, and I'm also looking at them, was to place them within my work, which is already a painting practice. And it went from them being the background and almost like this wallpaper behind the figure to actually incorporating them into the Black male figure. Because the way I see it is like I use them as clothes. Clothing and like this, like fashion, but it's a way of establishing individuality and personality and this spirituality that from my ancestors that exists within me. So I really use the collage, I really empower the collage material in this way, as if it were an entity that exists within the figure and is personified from the past to who I am now. And then the soil has become this new collage material that I'm using, which is really exciting and something that I explored at first at my residency at Pratt Forward, which was a residency that Jane South and McLean Thomas started a few years ago. And it's in Brooklyn, and we were in Brooklyn Navy Yard at New Lab, and I just learned how to draw with soil, and I sourced it from the farm that I grew up on. And then it became like this precious relic. So I didn't want to use too much of it. I just kind of wanted to really dance with it and see what it could do so I could use it later. And I used so much of it, I had to get more. And then I had to learn how to use it properly in an archival way. way, because artists, we have our recipes, but we don't necessarily share them. So it had to be me really going out and trial and error and really failing. But I think what's in, to wrap it up, sorry, but to, what I really think about soil and how I'm using it is, it's thinking about slavery. It was so long ago, right? I think that's an argument that people use, or they just think it was so long ago. Get over it. Our culture should be over it. But really, it really wasn't that long ago. And it affects us still today. I think about the glaciers that flatten the land on the farm that I grew up on. And it became conducive to growing corn, which feeds the cattle industry, which feeds America and the world. And America becomes very rich off of this. So when you're thinking about things that are so long ago, I mean, that was hundreds of thousands of years ago. So to think about slavery, it's a blink of an eye. So I'm really trying to shorten the gap of our perspective of history when I'm using these materials.
Yeah, I love everything that you've just shared. There's so many things that I want to pull on. And this happens often in these kinds of conversations. The responses that I get are so dynamic and so layered that I'm like, I could ask you just 20 more questions from that one response. But in the interest of time and kind of staying grounded in kind of who you are, what you're doing, what your work is about, and kind of giving people maybe a little bit of that visual picture of your work, some of the folks that are listening that may not be so familiar or have seen much of your work, can we talk a little bit more about the UTA show and just the kinds of world building that you were creating? And thinking through the use of the soil, the use of oil paint, and also I really kind of want to talk about your approach to painting while being self-taught and how you've kind of cultivated your own visual language in a way that is very specific to you.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Yeah, when I was thinking about the show at UTA, it was like, you know, I wanted to utilize all of the galleries and I wanted to create a world environment. And I had this really unique chance to do that. And so I seized it. And I thought it would be interesting to create work as soon as they presented the idea to me, right? It wasn't like a guarantee that they would be giving me this show, but I treated it as such. And so I always start with writing. I think it's really important to map out kind of like a short concept of maybe genealogically what I'm thinking, like a specific ancestor that I'm interested in, and then going and then elaborating on what it means to me. So in this instance with Emerald's Garden, I'm thinking about my great-grandmother, but then what is going on with me this year? And really being patient in my studio practice to be like very generous with that on the canvas. And so what you're seeing in the show is really like, when I look back at it myself personally, I'm like, wow, that was me in 2023, because I was making work. It took a year to make the show and to realize it. And so I'm starting with a hypothesis of a question. And then like, you may not get an answer, but you do get an idea of like where I was mentally. And I'm really proud of where I was in the growth from my past and the personal work that I do on personal trauma. Every single day I can witness that progress through each work. And then like curatorially, how do you really display that? And so I think that becomes a challenge that I wasn't ready for, because I don't know. I didn't want to make a timeline of how I felt about the year, but I also wanted to leave it up to the viewer. And I had dicks that I was working with and diptychs. And then I created works at Skowhegan. I did a residency at Skowhegan School of Painting and Sculpture in Skowhegan, Maine last summer. And that just cracked open something in my practice that I didn't even expect. And I wasn't thinking about Emerald's Garden when I was there, but she was with me. I mean, I grew up like very religious. And so I kind of step away from any kind of organized religion or anything like that. I think about what like my own personal spiritual journey has given me. And I witnessed that. And I felt like Amaryllis, like my great grandmother was with me in my greatest fears there in Maine. Like she really helped me confront, for instance, like I'm not a huge, even though I grew up in the country, I'm not a huge fan of bugs or like spiders specifically or moths. And I mean, I found myself like working at night in my studio in Maine and like being visited and being open to being visited by her through this moth that wouldn't let me leave me alone. And then I really embraced the way that the spiders spin their webs and drop from the ceilings. And so instead of being like, I can't do this, I can't work in the studio, I began personifying myself in the spider. And so like practicing these poses in which I became the spider. And then I used that work for the UTA show. So it really, when I'm telling you, there's like depths to the show that were really exciting and scary. I really mean it. And that's where you're seeing like this element of heaven and hell. So you're seeing paintings that are very blissful and literally paradise. And then you're seeing the underbelly of how I use the soil to create this different personality of confronting your own fear and who you are and moving past that. And that too can be beautiful. That metamorphosis of moving past something that like stunts you and holds you back. It's just like, it's so beautiful to be on the other side and so rewarding. And that's kind of what happened with Amaryllis Garden.
Yes. And how are you thinking? I mean, you know how when you finish a show and it's a really big show and there's a lot that you've poured into it, it's like writing a piece or doing any other big project. You hit this kind of big moment, crescendo, lots happening. And then there's that down period, right? Where you're like either maybe just recouping your energy or kind of coming down from a high. And that can be a multitude of feelings and experiences. But as you're thinking about moving forward and what the future holds, the rest of 2024, more of the work that you want to do. And of course, this question is so layered. But it's like, what are you thinking about right now? What are you excited about? But maybe what's also kind of scary and challenging? We've talked a bit on the call about the world and how crazy it is. And even before we started recording, you were telling me a little bit about like how you've moved from New York to LA, have been living in LA for a while, like how right. things are, how you are experiencing those things. So yeah, in terms of where you are now and what you're thinking about for the future, what are some of the thoughts, ideas, and feelings that are kind of like bubbling up for you?
It's really interesting because, like I told you, I moved to LA 2 years ago from New York, where I spent almost 10 years, and how, like, New York was so hard and everything was a grind, but also it was, you know, I was so connected to people, and that was such a beautiful experience and really influenced my art in ways. You just can't take that back. And then LA has this wonderful ecosystem, the art ecosystem, and especially for Black art, has been so rewarding here. But it's been intense. It's been wild. I mean, the reception here in Los Angeles has been so wonderful that I've been working very hard. And so I've been, one of my New Year's resolutions, I hate that, but one of the things that I really want to work on is rest and peace. And I think my best work comes from that. I think I love to work. I love being in the studio. I think I have things that I could work on where it is more, it looks more like rest. It looks more at peace. It's not so manic. And I'm looking forward to working on that. So like when the show ended, all shows are kind of a letdown.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's really a bummer. And so now I'm kind of like facing a lot of the things, not only the reception and just kind of wanting, I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but like wanting that attention again of talking about these people that are special to me and talking about what's going on in the studio. That's why this is exciting for me. And thank you for having me again, is because I get a chance to really like dive into the work and dive into what I made. But for a long time, like in the studio, you're just so, it's lonely. You're here with materials. You're here with your work. And you're just like, how can I grapple with that? So even today in the studio, I'm showing up. I have no plan other than to prepare for a show later this year that I'm excited to announce later.
Sure, yeah.
But it's really exciting.
TBD.
It's so exciting. But yeah, so I'm like working on it. But I'm working on it, and I'm still kind of like in Amaryllis' garden to give myself grace and allow myself to kind of have closure with that show is important to me. And I should take that seriously and take the opportunity. And like when I'm moving forward, like for this next show, I'm really thinking about like even more heavy things. So I'm thinking about how an old story, or how the truth of a story or a fable becomes a fable, basically. Like old family stories that evolve into outlandish tales.
Yes.
Like specifically old family. And at what point does that service us, and what point does it disservice us, and what's the truth, and will we ever know? But I'm really interested in what that means for me, like today, what these stories do. Kind of, for example, I always heard the Cherokee princess story in Black culture, and I've heard so many and African American stories about this Cherokee princess. And then I will, in several legs of my story, of my family history, I've disproved it. And it's really just comes from like the tragedy of being Black in America and whatever century that is. So I'm like, at what point did we turn that into Indian princess? And at what point, and what did it serve?
And how who did it serve? Like, who?
Yeah, who?
Who's and benefiting so from this?
So that's kind of what I'm doing next. And so that deserves its own space in its own right. Yeah, I'm just trying to take it easy and just be like kind to myself, good to myself, good to others, really celebrate other artists that I love and appreciate and who have shown me so much love. So yeah, I'm just full of gratitude, really. That's all I can really say at this point.
No, I feel that. And I think that it's a really great way to end things, at least for this conversation, and kind of leave the audience and the listeners with a high note and a lot of positivity, because the world is so wild and crazy right now. And I think for me, where I'm at, it's every time I look at the news or open Instagram, I've tried to get off Instagram lately, and then I'm watching the news, but that's also making me really sad and depressed. And it's just like, where do you find these pockets of peace and joy? And in terms of being able to support other artists and give love to the other people out in your community and your world who are doing things that you're inspired by, like we all have a part to play and we all can do things that deeply inspire each other. And I think it's also about understanding some of your own limitations, and maybe one might be struggling with their own things internally, right? And you have to deal with that as well and kind of contend with like, where am I in my life? Where do I want to go? And understanding that you're going to make mistakes, you have to grow, and being also having grace for yourself too, right? So that you can show up.
That's right. That is right. I love that you said that. Giving grace to yourself.
Yeah, because we're all like, it's this whole life thing, it's no joke. It's not easy stuff.
It's not. But we have each other. I feel like we have a great community. I love what you're doing. I'm really excited that you're doing this. And I just think our community, we do it. We make it happen. We show up for each other. And it's just, my heart is so full just right there in that. That it just gives me strength to just move and do it and make me comfortable to do what I do over here. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. Mm. Yeah, and being able to look out into your community and recognize how lucky we are and how we can continue to show up for each other and support each other in so many different ways. And again, hearkening back to what I said, we're all going through our things. We're all like learning and figuring it out. And sometimes things land and they're weird, or like sometimes you go through things that are really difficult with people. It doesn't mean that you're not good or they're not good. It just means that y'all are going through stuff. And that's life, you know? As long as we continue to show up for each other, I think that's what matters the most.
Exactly.
This has been such a lovely episode, Mario, and so happy to chat with you.
Thank you so much. Wonderful to chat with you.
That was my episode with Mario Joyce. I want to give a big shout out and a big thank you to Mario for joining me on the show.
And it's a wrap, folks. That was our episode of Everything is Connected, conversations on culture and current events with some of today's hottest creative contemporaries. These episodes are recorded remotely and on location wherever in the world I find myself, whether that be the US, Africa, Europe, the Middle East, the Caribbean, and more. Depending on where I am at the time of these recordings, you will hear the sights and the sounds of my local environment.
I look forward to continuing these wonderful conversations with artists and creative professionals across industries with you. I'm your host, Folashade Ologundudu, and we'll see you next time. As always, stay motivated, stay inspired, and stay up. Peace and love, y'all. We out.